The Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose. Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr@scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com. The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. The dictionary defines Hobson's choice as an apparently free choice that actually offers no alternative. That's what the government and big business are doing to Americans yet to be vaccinated for COVID-19. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, the law that governs such things as emergency use vaccines, states that a condition on emergency use drugs includes the option to accept or refuse administration of the product. The Food and Drug Administration fact sheet states it is your choice to receive the vaccine. The National Institute of Health quotes the Nuremberg Code on experimental drugs, saying voluntary consent is absolutely essential. But if your job depends on getting the vaccine, is it really a choice? No, I would say it's Hobson's choice. It's apparently a free choice. It is by law. But in actuality, if you're working, if you have to support a family, you're offered no alternative. Here's a very simple but profound rule that Francis Schaeffer, a Christian theologian, put in his book, How Should We Live Now? The Rise and Fall of Western Civilization. Now, when Francis Schaeffer wrote this book back in, I believe, the 1970s, I believe this is one of the most prophetic books looking into our future and showing us where we are now. This man was a genius, and he said, here is a simple but profound rule. If there are no absolutes by which to judge society, then society is the absolute. And that's where we find ourselves in 2021, rolling on a collision course between Marxism, communism, and society becoming the absolute, because absolute truth is the first casualty in this cold civil war. Jock Attali, who was a Freemason and a Bilderberger, wrote in 1981, while he was then advisor to Francis Mitterrand. So this guy is one of the, quote, elites, said the future will be about finding a way to reduce the population. We start with the old because as soon as they exceed 60 to 65 years, people live longer than they produce, and that costs society dearly. Then the weak and the useless do not help society because there will always be more of them. And above all, ultimately, the stupid. Euthanasia targeting these groups. Euthanasia will have to be an essential tool in our future societies in all cases. Of course, we will not be able to execute people or build camps. We must get rid of them by making them believe that it is for their own good. You know, for the greater good. I added that. He went on to say, overpopulation and the mostly useless is something that is too costly economically. Socially, too. It is much better when the human machine comes to an abrupt standstill than when it gradually deteriorates. Neither will we be able to test millions upon millions of people for their intelligence. You bet that. We will find a cause, something a pandemic targeting certain people, a real economic crisis or not, a virus affecting the old or the fat, it doesn't matter. The weak will succumb to it. The fearful and the stupid will believe in it and seek treatment. We will have made sure the treatment is in place, treatment that will be the solution. The selection of idiots then takes care of itself. You go to the slaughter by yourself. Now, understanding Attili's quote, you can see the fine line here. The government can't really come out and mandate an experimental vaccine. That would be an obvious violation of our constitutional rights, but the government can coerce or collaborate with the private sector to mandate the vaccine. I mean, sure, there'll be legal challenges to these type of mandates, especially those who deny food to people by not allowing entry into a restaurant without proof of vaccination, etc. This type of bullying is actual fascism, the very thing that those who are doing the bullying are accusing of the unvaccinated. I wonder if all employees of the government or companies mandating the vaccine, I wonder if they were to strike indefinitely, how long would these mandates last? The Democratic Party politicians, the media, the Hollywood celebrities have called the unvaccinated criminals and murderers. And they have demanded in some forms putting them in prison. They say follow the science, but they refuse to acknowledge the most exact science, math. Because according to the CDC website, more than 163 million Americans are fully vaccinated. Of those, only 6,200 roughly have been hospitalized with the China flu, and only 1,200 have died. Of the vaccinated who have been seriously ill or died, 74% are over 65. And among the vaccinated, only 1 out of 26 plus thousand people have gotten seriously ill. And among the unvaccinated, only 1 in 129,000 have died. So how can unvaccinated be a threat to the vaccinated? And the answer is they can't. The answer is we're losing absolute truth, not only in our society, but in medicine, because if there's no absolute medicine, then the medical bureaucracy is the absolute or the absolute truth. Now, getting the vaccine is your personal choice. It's up to you. I'm not going to judge you. But no one should be forced under the guise that it is their choice when it isn't. Neither should they be demonized as fascists for resisting fascism. Fascism, communism, socialism are all satanic and humanistic challenges to God's perfect liberty. And historically, they are unequivocally tied to tyranny and death. That's what we're seeing in the United States of America today. You're not getting the facts. You're getting someone's version of what they want you to know. And I believe Americans on both sides of the aisle recognize this. And so it's my heart today that you would listen carefully to this short podcast and you would share it with everyone you know. Because the only way to return this nation to the status that makes it the greatest nation in the world is to speak the truth and not be pushed into the lack of absolutes by which to judge society, and then society, quote unquote, becomes the absolute. Because right now, I believe society is moving towards personal peace and affluence. Personal peace means just to be let alone, not to be troubled by the troubles of other people, whether across the world or across the city, just to live one's life with a minimal possibility of being personally disturbed. Personal peace means wanting to have my personal life pattern undisturbed in my lifetime, regardless of what the result will be in the lifetimes of my children or grandchildren. Is that where we are today? Because Francis Schaeffer wrote about this over 40 years ago. Affluence means an overwhelming and ever-increasing prosperity, a life made up of things, things and more things. As my friend Charlie Kirk says, more plastic from China. A success judged by an ever higher level of material abundance. Is that all we're about today, is peace and affluence? Because if it is, as Schaefer points out, then we have laid the seeds on the fertile ground of tyranny. One way to prevent that from happening is to speak the truth. And now Dr. Fauci likes to give us his version of the truth, although his version of the truth changes like he probably changes his underwear, although he's so short, I don't know how many times he changes his underwear, but he does change his opinion a lot. And his version of truth is what he says, not what he actually reads or understands. And we know this. We've put together many montages, and I'll just remind you on something simple like wearing a mask. Listen to Dr. Fauci bounce from one side to another, and he speaks with such authority and such confidence. But at the same time, I call it invincible ignorance, although he knows what he's doing. He just wants you to follow his words and not look at his actions. Cut one.
She apparently had asked you whether she should wear a mask on a trip, and you responded to her concluding, "I do not recommend that you wear a mask, particularly since you are going to a very low risk location."
That indoors, there's no real problem. You're protected. You don't have to wear a mask.
If you were going into a completely crowded situation where people are essentially falling all over each other, then you wear a mask. But any other time, if you're vaccinated and you're outside, put aside your mask. You don't have to wear it.
Wearing masks, clearly, if you look at the data, diminishes respiratory diseases.
Well, let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Masks are protective. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
A lot of folks are hearing now about double masking, wearing two masks or trying to get one of those N95 medical grade masks. Do you believe that that's advisable and makes a difference?
You know, it likely does, because, I mean, this is a physical covering to prevent droplets and virus to get in.
If you really want to have an extra little bit of protection, maybe I should put two masks on. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's no data that indicates that that is going to make a difference.
Yeah, Dr. Fauci's all over the place. But you know someone who's not all over the place? That's Dr. Peter McCullough. And Dr. McCullough's extensive list of credentials include, and I want you to listen to Dr. McCullough's credentials, and I'm going to read you what he says. He's an internist, a cardiologist, an epidemiologist. He's the professor of medicine at Texas A&M College of Medicine. He's the president at the Cardiorenal Society of America. He's the editor-in-chief of the Cardiorenal Medicine Journal and of Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine, and a senior associate editor at the American Journal of Cardiology. And he both practices medicine and publishes academic scientific articles. He is a subject matter expert. And Dr. McCullough provides a real expert's take on these crucial issues relating to COVID-19. And you've heard me say it over and over again, but I want you to understand what this professional says, because he wrote five key messages of scientific truth. Now, this is not absolute. This is not cultural truth. This is not bureaucratic truth. This is not medical bureaucracy truth. This is scientific truth. And he says this truth sounding the pandemic needs to be taken into account. Five things. And if you don't take anything home from this message or this podcast today, take this home. First, the virus doesn't spread among asymptomatic people, like I've said, for over a year. It just doesn't. Second, asymptomatic people should not get tested. That is generating false positives, creating extra cases. Third, natural immunity gained after having the virus is robust, complete, and durable. Fourth, COVID-19 and even the variants are easily treatable at home and with early intervention. And fifth, the coronavirus jabs by Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca are right now obsolete. His words, not mine. In fact, Dr. McCullough pointed out the experimental vaccines must be considered unsafe and unfit for human use. His words. He mentioned some of the dangerous side effects brought on by the injection. Meanwhile, he also said that safe and effective medicines and treatments have not been promoted, even though they have saved lives and could save more. Dr. McCullough went on to note that social and mass media companies have agreed to promote the nation that vaccines are safe and to shun information on early treatment and vaccine injuries. And he calls this overt and an overt censorship program. And what we're seeing now is it's coming down to pressure, coercion, threats of reprisal, and even forced vaccination. And I believe, based on the current data and reports, that you're going to see more problems with this vaccine than prevention. I have a friend who's a cardiologist in Israel, and Israel is almost 100% vaccinated, yet over 65%, 70% of the population is getting a COVID variant, that the vaccines have proved useless, and there are countless reports of deaths after the vaccine. On the CDC's own voluntary reporting site, there's over 10,000 serious incidents and deaths. And a current CDC whistleblower has filed an affidavit in federal court under penalty of perjury stating that there are over 45,000 deaths that haven't been reported. Now, as a physician, I've seen commercials on TV when you talk about a drug and it gives all the warnings and really rapid speech after they talk about it. And when we wanted to use hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, the medical bureaucracy said there's not an it's good for some things. And in full disclosure, we've used those for over 60 years and they have a great safety profile. But the medical bureaucracy said, well, it hasn't been tested and proven safely to treat COVID. Yet they're pushing out a vaccine that hasn't been tested and proven safe to prevent COVID, treat COVID, or prevent the spread of COVID. Yet they're not having safety meetings every week and giving that information to the American people. And it was only a little over a month ago when they did their first autopsy, according to a pathologist out of the Mayo Clinic, who's also an immunologist, who stated the first autopsy was done on a COVID vaccine death. And he was livid, and he was in a public forum saying, we should be doing autopsies on every person to understand what's going on here. But the elites don't want to understand. So how did we get here? How did our society rise to greatness and then fall? I look back to Francis Schaeffer's book. And if you don't read a book this year, read this one. It's called How Should We Live Then? Because the basic thought form of modern people became almost totally the accepted viewpoint as an almost monolithic consensus. And as it came to the majority of people through art, music, drama, theology, and mass media, Schaeffer writes, values died. And as more Christian-dominated consensuses weakened, the majority of people adopted two impoverished values, the ones I spoke about earlier, personal peace and affluence. Personal peace means just to be let alone. Don't be troubled by other people, whether across the world or across the city. You know, live your best life. And to live one's life with minimal possibilities of being, quote, personally disturbed. Personal peace means wanting to have my personal life platform undisturbed in my lifetime, regardless of the result that will cause in the lifetimes, the results that it will cause in the lifetimes of my children and my grandchildren. And affluence means an overwhelming and ever increasing prosperity. Like I talked about, a life made up of things, things, and more things. A success judged by an ever higher level of material abundance. And for several generations, the fragmented concept of knowledge and the life which had become dominant was taught by the young, to the young, by many, listen to this, professors in universities around the world. All too often, the students of the early 60s asked their parents and others, why should I go to college? And they were told to make money so that you can send your children to the college or university. And according to this kind of spoken or implied answer, there was no meaning for man and no meaning for education. Much of the mass media popularized these concepts, pouring them out in an endless stream so that the whole generation from its birth had been injected, or I would say, you know, vaccinated, with the teaching that reason leads to pessimism in regard to a meaning of life and with reference to any fixed values. That's how you get the death of truth and of absolute truth. That's how you replace it with cultural truth. And this had been that generation's atmosphere in the 60s. And it had no personal memory of the days when Christianity had more influence on the consensus. And those folks raised in that time are now in leadership in our nation today. They were trained in universities that saw themselves as little computers controlling the larger computer of the universe, controlled by the larger computer of the university, which in turn was controlled by a still larger computer of the state. The work ethic, which had meaning within the Christian framework, just became ugly as the Christian base was removed, and work became an end to itself. And Schaefer goes on to talk about, with no reason to work and no values to determine what to do with the products of one's work, you basically just open yourself up for a mass societal rule. And then suddenly in 1964 at the University of California at Berkeley, the students carried these ideas about the meaninglessness of man into the streets. Does that sound familiar? I mean, why should anyone have been surprised? Many of the teachers taught the ultimate meaninglessness of man and the absence of absolutes, but they themselves lived inconsistently by depending on the memory of the past. So is it not natural that one generation would begin to live on the basis of what they had been taught? Or currently, is this generation living on the basis of what they've been taught, just like the students that came out of Berkeley in 1964? Because the only hope of meaning had been placed in the area of non-reason. And so in the 60s, drugs came into the picture because everyone hoped that drugs would provide the meaning inside one's head, in contrast to objective truth concerning which they had given up all hope of ever having. Schaefer writes about this in his book. He writes about a gentleman named Timothy Leary, who wrote The Madness of the 60s and Me. And Leary said to Schaefer, "Death to the mind, that is the goal you must have. Nothing else will do." You see, for the elites to take over, to push an agenda, they have to have death to the mind. And even at Berkeley in the 60s, the free speech movement arose simultaneously with the hippie world of drugs. And at first, it was politically neither left or right, but rather a call for the, quote, freedom to express any political view. But soon, the free speech movement became the dirty speech movement, in which freedom was basically just shouting four-letter words into a microphone. And soon after that, it became a platform for the political new left, which followed the teaching of Herbert Marcuse. Marcuse was a German professor of philosophy. He taught at the Frankfurt School along with Theodor Adorno, Max Horkheimer, and Jürgen Habermas, laying the founding groundwork of more Marxist thought. And Marcuse became the inspiration of the new left. Marcuse, he was teaching at the University of California at San Diego. And for some time, young people were fighting against their parents' impoverished values of personal peace and affluence. Because personal peace and affluence is an empty shell of satisfaction. And that's why what you see today, a lot of these radical students, a lot of the folks from Antifa come from very affluent homes that live for personal peace and affluence, the gathering of things. And now, whether the left is fighting through Marcuse's ideology or taking drugs as an ideology, young people want more to life than personal peace and affluence. And the left is trying to provide that for them through alternate culture. Just telling them, if you want more, you got to rebel. Because you're a victim. And if you're a victim, you have the right to rebel. You see, the young people today, they're right in their analysis of the problem. They're just mistaken in the solution. And we have to pay attention to this. We have to pay attention to this Marxist-Leninist ideology that's taking over in the United States. This isn't new. We saw it back in the 60s and 70s taking over in South America and other parts of the world. But it has made its way here due to the fertile ground of academia telling you that truth is just a construct. Alexander Solzhenitsyn writes, from the most ancient times, justice has been a two-part concept. Virtue triumphs and vice is punished. But when Solzhenitsyn wrote about communist Russia, he said, young people are acquiring the conviction that foul deeds are never punished on earth, that they always bring prosperity. And then he added, it is going to be uncomfortable, horrible to live in such a country. Are we seeing young people today that believe that foul deeds will bring prosperity, that riots or, quote, mostly peaceful protests are the way to go? That's what we're seeing. And materialism, the philosophic base for Marxist-Leninism, gives no basis for the dignity or rights of man. Where Marxism is not in power, it attracts and converts by talking much of the dignity and rights, but its materialistic base gives no basis for the dignity or rights of man. It just attracts the constant talk of idealism. This was written 40 years ago, and it's exactly what we're experiencing in the United States of America today. And to understand this phenomenon, we have to understand that Marx reached over to that for which Christianity does give base. Because as a believer in Christ, as a man of faith, and men and women of faith, we understand the dignity of man. But Marx just took those words as words of his own. And the only understanding the idealistic sounding Marxist is that Christianity is heresy. And not having the Christian base until it comes to power, it uses words for Christianity that does have the base. So Marxism will take the language. But wherever Marxism has its power, it has no place in history. Because everywhere it shows up, it brings oppression. But as soon as they get power, then the desire of the majority has become a concept without meaning. Like I spoke about, men have presuppositions and will live more consistently with these presuppositions than even they themselves know. Oswald Chambers famously said, seeing is not believing. We interpret things in the light of what we believe, not of what we see. And that's why Francis Schaeffer said, people's presuppositions rest upon that which they consider to be the truth of what exists. Now, I know this is kind of deep, but if you understand what great men that came before us saw, then you will understand how to combat and defeat this Marxist ideology by exposing it with sunlight that it so richly deserves. In the United States of America today, we have a lot of problems that have developed from just man's desire to be autonomous from God's revelation. And in the Bible and through Christ, increasingly reached its natural conclusions. Sociologically, law is king. That was basically the foundation for Samuel Rutherford's Lex Rex book. and was no longer, law is king, and was no longer the base whereby one could be ruled by law, but rather be ruled by arbitrary judgments of men, and whereby there could be wide freedoms without chaos. Francis Schaeffer wrote that 40 years ago. Being ruled by arbitrary judgments of men, whereby there could be wide freedoms without chaos. In any ways, our system was still working, largely due to the sheer inertia of the continuation of past principles, but we couldn't continue to borrow from that. And as we've seen, the danger that is now present, the clear and present danger, is that without a sufficient base, modern science will become sociological science. So civil law has moved towards being sociological law. I'll repeat that. Civil law has become sociological law, where the masses or the current cultural norms determine what is right and wrong. Distinguished jurist and Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes took a long step in this direction in Common Law. Holmes said that law is based on experience. Daniel Benson, assistant professor of law at Texas Tech School of Law, quoted Holmes, "Truth is the majority vote of that nation that could lick all others." And in a 1926 letter, he wrote, "So when it comes to the development of corpus juris, the ultimate question is, what do the dominant forces of the community want, and do they want it hard enough to disregard whatever inhibitions may stand in the way?" What do the forces of the community want, driven by community organizers? And do they want it bad enough to stand in the way of their inhibitions? I don't know, to the vaccine, to All Lives Matter, to the robbing of your finances for your future children and grandchildren. Will it remove those inhibitions if the community wants it bad enough? And this is really different from a biblical basis, to where justice points to the word of God, the golden rule, the law of nature and nature's God, which is the Bible. Frederick Moore Vincent, former Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, spelled out this problem by saying, "Nothing is more certain in modern society than the principle that there is no absolutes. All is relative. All is experience. In passing, we should note that the curious mark of our age, the only absolute allowed is the absolute insistence that there is no absolute." Are we seeing that today? The absolute insistence that there is no absolute male and female, but like 37 under genders? Are we seeing the absolute today that you don't need? There's no absolute in voting. I mean, you don't have to have an ID. But unless you want to eat at a restaurant, you need a vaccine passport. You are creating absolutes out of whole cloth. That's where we find ourselves today. We've given up all hope that nature would give us the fixed value in law. It's been abandoned because people have gotten away from Christian principles and gone to sociological rules. A Christian Jewish lawyer once wrote that he considered the serious meaning of the Nuremberg war crimes trials. "I knew then that no moral law was written on a blade of grass, in a drop of water, or even in the stars. I realized the necessity of the divine immutable law as set forth in the sacred Torah, consisting of definite commandments, statutes, ordinances, and judgments. And now man has failed to build only from himself autonomously, and to find a solid basis in nature for law." And so we're left today with Oliver Wendell Holmes' quote, experience, and Frederick Moore Vincent's statement that nothing is more certain in modern society than that there are no absolutes. What does this all boil down to? These arbitrary absolutes characterize nothing short of direct Marxist or communistic rule. And we're seeing this drift pick up speed and flow into the river of tyranny at full speed. And the tremendous changes of direction can be made, and the majority of the people tend to accept them without question. No matter how arbitrary the changes are or how big a break they must make with past law or past consensus. And that's where we are today. We've made the break from past law and past consensus to arbitrariness. And this arbitrariness is having Hobson's law, Hobson's rule, our Hobson's choice shoved down our throats, where we don't have an apparent free choice, but it's actually, we think it's free, but we have no other alternative than to follow what society says. And that's not how this country was founded. And that's not how we're going to remain great. Galatians 5:1 says, "Stand fast, therefore, in liberty, by which Christ has made us free. And do not be entangled again with a yoke of bondage." You see, the vaccine is the only tool giving the facade of a Hobson's choice. Using the authority of the law, another choice, is to resist it in the strongest terms. Resist the coercion of the use of the vaccine, which is just to coerce tyranny. I know this has been a little deep today, but think about it. I encourage you to get Francis Schaeffer's book, How Should We Live Then? It was written in the 70s, and it speaks directly to today. Look up Dr. Peter McCullough. He'll talk to you about the vaccines. He'll give you hope by providing truth. And I believe this nation is full of people that are starving or thirsty for truth. We have to pay attention. I'm going to try to do several podcasts this week. I say that a lot. We're going to do it because we need to get the word out. We have to understand the past to move into the future. Appreciate you spending some time with me this morning. I apologize. I didn't put out a podcast last week, but my producer Everett had family vacation, and family is always more important than your actual work. But paying attention to what's going on in this world is very important if you want your children and your grandchildren to live in the same free society that we've been blessed to live in today. Go out and have a great day, and remember, most importantly, let's keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line, freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times, standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey, your secret's safe with the NSA. In God we trust, or the CIA, standing on the edge of a revolution.
With Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.